And he's alive.
How long was that?
7 minutes. That's crazy, man. How do you do it?
I don't know. I just like being in water. It's one place I can think.
There are 12 Olympian gods.
Big three are the brothers Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades. The children of these gods were half human, half gods.
Hey, Mom. I thought this school was supposed to make things better.
Someday it'll all make sense.
Percy Jackson, we need to talk.
Miss Dodds?
Whoa!
They found him.
Who found me?
We've been expecting you.
What's going on?
The gods are real. You're half mortal, half god?
My father's Poseidon.
God of the seas.
Your blood is special.
This February.
Why am I here?
Zeus's bolt is the most powerful weapon ever created.
It's been stolen.
Everyone thinks you're the lightning thief.
I didn't steal it.
Lines will be drawn.
If it's not returned by the summer solstice, there will be a war.
And those with powers.
All demigods have inherited skills.
Must stand and fight.
We'll find the bolt.
There's nowhere safe on heaven and earth for him now. Take this to defend yourself. It's a powerful weapon.
This is a pen.
Only use it in times of severe distress.
This is a pen.
Click it!
Whoa!
Time has run out.
Maybe you're no son of Poseidon.
Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief.
Come on, sneak a peek.
Lucy, this is a pen.
Is it actually a sword?
It is a sword. The pen sword. A happy Christmas. Why did I say happy Christmas? I'm not British. What the hell?
What do you mean?
I just said it's happy Christmas because it's 4 days after Christmas. It's Merry Christmas.
Oh, we say Merry Christmas.
Yep. I thought it was happy Christmas.
No, we can. It's interchangeable.
Is it really?
I would say Merry Christmas mainly, though.
Was that American influence? We were just over there in World War II saving y'all's asses for so long.
I have no
we
idea.
Made y'all keep it. No, maybe that's.
We said there was going to be no historical diet.
Oh, God, today. You're right. You're right. Okay, I already failed that. All right. Yes, we're here, Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief 2010. And you might have heard that laugh and saying, what? Who's that disembodied voice? Alyssa, welcome.
Hi. Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's very good to have you back. I feel like it's been a while.
It has been like a hot second, I feel like. But yeah, super glad to be back and talking about this. This is like a big Percy Jackson weekend for me, watching both films this weekend for different shows. So putting myself through the ringer, I feel like.
Yeah, I did see that because I know it was the podcast you're talking about. What's it called?
The Newest Olympian.
The Newest Olympian. That's right. Because he did with Pottermore, right?
Potterless.
Oh. Potterless. Pottermore
the
is the official
JK
thing.
Rowling.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, his breakout show was Potterless because he had never read the Harry Potter series before. And then after that, after he finished that, he moved on to Percy Jackson, which is just the gift that keeps on giving. So I'm excited to chat to you guys about it today. But yeah, watched The Lightning Thief for you guys today. And then separately, watching the Sea of Monsters for like a patron live stream for that show. But yeah, I haven't seen these films before, so this was certainly a ride.
Yes, it was indeed, I bet. But before we get started on that, just a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so formally by day, I'm a product designer in the fitness industry. And at night, I work on podcasts. So I've got two. One you may know, Breakfast in Beauclair, which is a Global Witcher podcast. So chatting to people all around the world about the Witcher books, book series, and games. And the other show that I work on, I executive produce an audio fiction series called Peculiar Radio, full like 40 person cast and crew, full writer's room, original story, 12 episodes. And around the time that this episode comes out, we should be on our way to the end of our first season. So make sure you check out Peculiar Radio as it's coming out.
That sounds awesome.
Makes me a little bit anxious. It's hard enough, like, just getting me and Lucy on the same page just to do this at times. And then when we get a guest also to do it. But yeah, 40 people to bring together and actually create something original in that sense is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's been about 2.5 to 3 years in the making.
Wow.
So super exciting to be releasing it now.
Awesome. Yes, make sure to check that out in the links below. You also have somewhat of a history also with Percy Jackson. You said you've just watched the movies, though, but you have read all the books.
Yes. So I think I read like the first maybe 1, 2, or 3 books when I was a bit younger. I wasn't the right age for them. I was a little too old. But my sister had been reading them at the time. She's 5 years younger. And so I read, you know, a handful, put it down for many years, wasn't really thinking about it. And then my friends started The Newest Olympian, so gave me a reason to get back into the series. And it is middle grade, so it's definitely not for a 31-year-old woman, but it's fine. I mean, I had a great time reading them. There's a number of different series, and the author, Rick Riordan, is kind of continuing to expand and also bring in other authors from different cultures, authors of color, to kind of continually have, I guess, like just modern takes on mythology, like not dissimilar from, you know, The Witcher. Plowed through like the first 5 books. They're kind of, it's almost like The Witcher where they're in like 5 part segments. Enjoyed the first 5, loved the second series of 5. The last series of 5 was okay. But yeah, plowed through like 10 books in 2 weeks.
Wow.
That was crazy. My dog's also not named after one of the characters, but has the same name as one of the characters. So,
and that is, what's the dog's
Piper.
Name? Piper. Oh, okay. I was like, wait, was there a Piper in this movie?
No, book 6.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. We got a little bit to go before we get there.
Yeah.
Well, we should also say that, again, we're recording this on December 1st, so way ahead of it. But by now, at least for over a week, that the Amazon Prime series?
Disney Plus.
Disney Plus. Okay. Prime was the Fallout one, I think I was looking at.
Yes,
okay.
That's right.
Yes, that's right. And Disney Plus will be out. So hopefully it's good to everyone who's been waiting on it, because I know there seems to be a resounding agreement on with the perception of these movies. And so as we go through this one, we will look to your expertise to chime in with anything you think is interesting or probably better from the books, because I know me and Lucy both love to hear those differences, changes too.
Yeah, I really do. I love it when, like, even if it's a little bit of a spoiler, like if Brett tells me something from the Witcher books, I love hearing all the differences that they make. But with these ones in particular, I was watching the trailer for the new show that's coming out or will be out by the time this comes out. And like what you were just saying with regards to how people perceive these films, I was just saying before, all of the top comments are people saying, wow, I'm so glad that Percy Jackson is finally being adapted into something on the film. We've never seen anything like it. And people are just resounding, disregarding that it ever existed.
I mean, do you guys want the tea now or do you want the tea later?
Let's hear it.
So long story short, the writer and creator, Rick Riordan, gave the film rights to whoever produced the first films, and lost all creative control as soon as the rights were given away. So there's so much that happens in this film, and I presume in the second film as well, that is just like off the walls. So for context, Rick is, I think, a middle school or like elementary or high school teacher himself, and originally made the books. His son, I believe, has dyslexia, ADHD, which is what Percy the hero also has. So he kind of made these books as like a love letter to his son and to children with like special needs or that have different abilities like that. And so when they made the films, they aged up the characters, made them teenagers. There's so many raunchy, weird sex jokes that happen.
Dude, oh, I got him. Grover. Oh my god. Yeah,
apparently when the film came out, like, there are a ton of parents that took their kids to go see this show, to see this film. The monsters were too scary. There was too much that obviously wasn't age appropriate for like middle schoolers. And so there was like a huge backlash about like, what the fuck did this turn into? And so he was very unhappy. So he's been a lot like has a ton of creative control over the new Disney series. All the actors are age appropriate. Like I'm pretty sure it's following the books. It's like following the books to the letter, except for ways that like, because the books came out so long ago, the original ones, they're updating some things to be more appropriate for, you know, the current time, or making adaptations to make it smoother to film. But for the most part, supposedly it'll be like exactly like the books. So that's kind of the hot goss.
That was what I noticed mainly from the trailer for the new show, is that the actor who plays Percy looks a lot younger than the guy that we just saw in the film that we watched.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely feels like they've taken that on board.
Yeah. I mean, the books take place between when he's like 12 and 16, at least the first five books. So
He looks like he's supposed to probably be like 16 or so, but I saw where Brandon T. Jackson, who plays Grover, I think it was 26. Maybe when this came out. Yeah, I think he's 39 now. So that would be my age. If me in 2010 was playing a high schooler. So yeah, it was a little bit out there. But yes, we'll look forward to hearing all those differences. And yeah, some of this was just, it was wild. Did a poor job of explaining again who we are. Brett and Lucy here on the path. Talk about movies and all that. Wouldn't be a normal episode if we didn't get things out of order. But let's get into here, because what we started to do, it'll be old hat by the time we get to this, is we're going to guess the gross, which is usually where I quiz Lucy about the gross total that this movie made. But now we have this special guest contestant, Alyssa, here as well. So this is Percy Jackson, released in 2010, budgeted at $95 million. They got it under the $100 million. All right, so what was the box office gross for Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief?
I'll let you guess first, Alyssa, as our guest.
It'll be a complete shot in the dark. I'm assuming if the budget is around 90 million, obviously like billion is like a dream number and very few films reach that. I would say somewhere maybe around like the 200 to 300 million mark.
Okay.
Maybe like if I had to pick a number, maybe like 275, let's say.
Okay, 275. Yeah. Okay.
So usually, I think Brett told me this, to be considered a success, a film has to double its...
Well, that's like to break even is what it always was. But apparently now it's like 2.5. It's insane. But usually it has to double to at least break even or turn a little bit. So to be a success, apparently it has to be more than double.
Double its budget.
I probably overshot then.
Maybe. I'm not sure, because
it did get a sequel.
So it got a sequel. When it's based on books, I always feel like there's like this underlying fandom that will come out for it. But I had never heard of this film before you guys spoke about it. So when you messaged me saying, let's do this film, that was the first time I've ever heard
like,
of it at all. I was like, what is this?
Yeah, what?
So that is concerning. I'm gonna guess like the lower 200. I'm gonna say like 220, but I don't know. My guesses have been all over the place since we started playing this.
So
it's been very up and down. Yeah.
Alyssa, 275. You're gonna final go. Okay. Lucy, god damn. This grossed 226.4. Damn, that is the closest it has been.
I'm getting good at this.
Yes, you are getting good. But yeah, listen, you walked through it to like two to three, and I was like, oh, and then you did your shot a little bit. But I guess it was just enough to get the sequel. But I'm guessing the sequel did not get that.
That would be interesting to
see. I mean,
see.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to guess, I feel like, because like I don't have like a general map for like gross numbers, with the exception I'm like, 200 seems like a lot, but
yeah, it does. I think I've gotten better at it since we started this. I think initially, if we were to go back to the first episodes, I was guessing wildly over and under budget, or sorry, under gross. especially on those, I think we started during Halloween, so it was like all the thrasher films that we were watching, and I was just getting it so wrong.
You're guessing like 30 when it was actually like 300 or something. Yeah. So you're like, 30 is a lot.
I was like, I reckon they did really well. They got like 30 billion. 30.
And you hear me just go, okay. All right. So again, very good guesses though. Very good. Alyssa, first timer. Lucy's honing in on it. Now, next up is the Rotten Tomatoes score of the critics and the audiences, which now Lucy's going to put me to the test.
Yes.
You get to join in on this as well.
Yes, so this is a new one that we've been looking at, the Rotten Tomatoes meter.
Well, it'll be like the fifth time by the time this comes out.
By the time this comes out, yeah, you're right.
It's
yeah.
only our second time, though.
Yeah, the Rotten Tomato meter. So if you're not familiar, it's a film, I guess, review, critics review website. We have the tomato meter and we have the audience score. So it's from 1 to 100%. What do you reckon it got on the tomato meter, which is the critics reviews?
All right. So, I mean, you can kind of already tell this movie's not really good. It's kind of sucks,
no.
But it also seems like it wasn't that good of a movie. So I don't think the critics are going to like it. I'm sure people are going to be like, oh, it's a wannabe Harry Potter or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say 31 from the critics, okay. From the critics, 31.
Okay, Alyssa.
I think that's a solid guess. I know this is so hard. I feel like the audience score is going to be much, much lower.
See,
so
that's what I was about to think. It's just like, this might be the only time where the audience might torpedo it even further.
Yeah, so I feel like the critic score isn't going to be good, but I want to leave room for the audience. I don't know. Do I go for like a 29 or like a 35? Like, I feel like you're kind of in the right ballpark, Brett. Let's go like a tiny bit lower. Let's say 29.
Okay. So you have been a little bit under the tomato meter. For Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief is 48%.
About half. We're okay. Like half
which
and half.
Which is still a big green splat. It's not even a tomato. Yeah.
It is, but
it's a green
like
splat.
One out of two would have been, quote, positive, I suppose.
So what do you think about the audience score then? You both think it'll be lower?
I don't know. 48 is pretty low.
That was a cryptic question, Lucy.
Yeah, interesting. I'll say that. Usually, again, with something like this, it'll always be higher than what it is. But the diehards would have knocked it down. I feel like the audience score, if the audience score is under 80, that's bad. And so I'm going to say this is 56 for the audience.
Yeah, I feel like there's the distinction between like book readers and general audience. So I feel like to a general audience might be more around the scope of a critic score, but fans will probably bring it down. Like I feel like the fan score would be like 14%.
Oh yeah, it'd be under. Way under.
Yeah, it's gonna be like in the negatives.
Fandom walk so the Witcher could run. The Witcher is like, we have to be like the Percy Jackson fandom and review bomb everything.
Yeah, so I feel like the fandom score will be very low, but like if we're kind of averaging between like a okay score, I still think it's gonna be like maybe about the 30s or under. Let's say like 33.
Okay. Ooh, big difference.
Okay, there is. Yeah. Brett, you're a little bit closer. The audience score is 53%.
Yeah. Dang. Okay.
Which is a trash can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's usually really bad. But you're right. There would be a general audience that wouldn't know about, they wouldn't know necessarily about the books. They might think, it wasn't that good, as opposed to the dumpster fire that if you love this, that it probably would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, though. Good job.
All right. So with that out of the way, how about we get into this aforementioned dumpster fire directed by Chris Columbus, who I think will always be known most famously for 1999's Bicentennial Man.
Oh, yeah. That famous film.
Have you heard of it? Have you any of you heard of it? Alyssa, have you heard of it?
It sounds familiar by title.
It's Robin Williams and it's terrible. It's 99 Robin Williams. Oh, it's not. No, obviously Chris Columbus is known for Harry Potter. They were probably trying to get that, no pun intended, lightning in a bottle with this. And needless to say, it probably didn't hit the same.
I also noticed that he was a writer on Gremlins.
He wrote Gremlins. Yes, I was waiting to bring that up too. He's a writer.
Sorry, yeah. I stole.
No, not today. On our Gremlins episode.
Oh, on the Gremlins episode.
Now 4 weeks old, but yeah. All right. So the writer of this, we have Craig Titley, who did Cheaper by the Dozen and Cheaper
That's
by the Dozen
That's all I noticed.
Too.
Yeah.
He also did Scooby-Doo, that first Scooby-Doo, which wildly was written by James Gunn.
What else does he do?
You know what? I feel like that tracks now.
See, I've never seen the first Scooby-Doo. James Gunn is now running DC Studios. He was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
But I've heard, have you seen, Alyssa, have you seen that first Scooby-Doo?
Yeah, like with Linda Cardinelli and
yeah,
like
2004.
Oh, the live action one.
Yes.
Yeah, and like
I love it. I love it.
Is it wild? Is it kind of weird that something like he would have, like his touch was on that? You can tell that he would have written it?
Now that you mention it, I feel like it's got, like I can see the trajectory from Scooby-Doo to like Guardians. I can see it.
Oh, they're great fun. They are great fun.
Yeah. Was that nominated was that nominated on the bad movie? I think it might have been.
Really? I'll be so happy if it is.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe. Oh, sure. We'll put it on there eventually if it's not, if you want to cover it. But yeah, I never have. So yeah, that was pretty much it. But with that here, let's get going with 2010's Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. And so it starts out all this storm and all of that. And so this giant, which we'll learn is Poseidon, just walks out of the water. A fisherman sees him. And is this a universe already getting set where a camera hasn't been invented and no one can record this and they can just be seen out in the open? This is kind of a bad start for me, not gonna lie.
In the books, there's this thing called the mist, which is kind of like a screen, effectively, that when you as a mortal look at something that's fantastical. So I don't know what it could have been. Maybe it looks like a barge or a whale coming out of the water, but like it seems like it.
Yes, that fisherman was looking at him like he had just seen a fucking giant walk out of the Hudson Bay.
Yeah,
not Hudson Bay, Hudson River or East River. What side would that be? Would that be the East or the Hudson?
I, for context, I'm a New Yorker.
There you go. Yeah. People are like, how would she know that? Why would she know that?
So what it looked like a beach. Like it looked like a proper beach. The way that Manhattan is shaped, like you've got the Hudson River on the west side, the East River on the east side of
the
island.
Wow, what a coincidence.
And then you've got things like Coney Island, Governor's Island, Roosevelt Island kind of scattered through the rivers. It was the weird thing of just like where the Empire State Building is, where the next scene takes place, it's kind of smack in the middle of the island. So from where he was, which looked weirdly beach-like, so maybe it was like Coney Island or something, if he like floated in there, he would have had still had to like walk or take the train up or like do something.
They showed him
so,
walking.
Like, the whole thing felt very, it was just weird. Like, why?
Yeah, they showed him walking. It was so weird.
Like, you're a god. Why are you gonna, maybe he's cooling off. Maybe he's like, this train ride's gonna prep me for this family reunion and I just need to like get off some steam.
Good time feeling of a nighttime subway ride.
Mm-hmm. I was actually gonna ask you about that, Alyssa, as like a New Yorker. Does stuff like that, do you pick it out of films? Because I've found specifically, I was watching the latest series of, you know, You on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so the latest series of that was set in London. Yeah, and Joe, who's the main character, he'll be like walking through London and he just takes a stroll in like 5 minutes. He's on what I know as like a 50-minute tube ride away. And I'm like, that's so unrealistic. Like, you could never do that. So I just think New York shows up in things like that so much. Is that annoying to you to see things like that?
It's fun. I mean, it happens a lot. Like, I'll watch Marvel films, like they're set in New York and they'll do a pan over the city and I can literally see my house because it's a quite iconic building. So it's like, I can see my house from here and we're watching like the opening to like Ms. Marvel or the opening scene from Spider-Man 2 is like right outside my partner's apartment. So we were like watching Mysterio and like all this stuff. And it keeps panning over to Tom Holland and it's like, oh, we're literally in that building right now.
That's so
cool.
Like
that. Yeah.
All right. So we get on and there's Sean Bean shows up slumming it, just absolutely slumming it in this movie as Zeus. Something about Poseidon who came out, as I mentioned there, about how his son, who he's never seen, so much exposition just vomited out. And what the hell to me, though, is with this arbitrary deadline of returning the bolt in 14 days by midnight of the summer solstice. Why does that have to be by the summer solstice?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of like in the books, there's a lot about like prophecy and dates and astronomy and stuff. So like there's plenty of things there are plenty of things that like happen around specific dates. But I don't know.
It's more of a rhetorical bitching and moaning that I'm doing. It's just if he's taking the lightning and you lost your mojo or whatever it is, say, give me that fucking lightning bolt back tonight. Let's go find your kid who has taken it and let's get it. Don't wait 2 weeks to do it, Zeus.
For me, it was just the Sean Bean jump scare. I went into this film with no,
I didn't know either of the cast. Yeah.
Nothing like that. And then he popped up and I was like, holy shit, why is Sean Bean from Yorkshire on the top of the Empire State Building? What's going on here? But I loved it. And he just has his own accent in every film he's in.
And then also Poseidon is Kevin McKidd, who is the most Scottish motherfucker you can imagine. The movie Brave. The Pixar movie Brave, he plays a role in there and gets to use his own like rural Scottish. It's unintelligible, as a lot of Scottish people are, but especially outside of maybe Edinburgh or something like that. So yes, I see him and I'm like, hey, that's Kevin McKidd. And then Sean Bean is like, wow, so many people are going to pop up in this movie where I just type hello, so-and-so, hello, so-and-so. It's a hell
of a
cast.
That's a lot of my notes as well.
Yes, I'll give the movie that. The cast is awesome.
Yeah, that what was his name? Sorry, Kevin McKidd.
Kevin McKidd, yeah.
Yeah, I kept thinking that he looked so like Paul Bullion, you know, who plays Lambert in series of Netflix.
Yeah.
So many moments I was like, wow, that could be, especially because Paul Bullion has cut his hair off now and he has lovely short hair. I just kept thinking they look so similar. So I looked up Kevin McKidd and noticed that he was Scottish. And also he played the character of Soap McTavish in the original Call of Duty Modern Warfare trilogy. And I was like, that's why I recognize him.
Soap McTavish?
You don't remember him?
I didn't play that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I don't. Well, no, the name.
Soap McTavish.
I can't let go of the name. Why is his name Soap? Because I know from...
That's his nickname. His name's John.
But why, though? Like in Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, the guy's nickname was Soap. It was... Fuck. He's a director now. Oh, it's driving me crazy. To explain why he was a cook and blah, blah, blah. Why is Soap McTavish's name Soap?
I don't think they ever explain it, but that is one of the iconic lines from the game is, what the hell kind of name is Soap? I don't think they ever explain it, but they all have their nicknames, you know?
I feel like I was reading a Reddit thread about, at least in the military, like you get all sorts of weird nicknames for stupid stuff you've done. So
there'll be some kind of backstory.
Yes, did he drop the soap in the shower in which you're not supposed to? Oh, that's prison. Never mind. And oh, hell yes. High school movie time. Again, given my profession, I love when movies take place in high school because it's absolutely ridiculous. And the most ridiculous thing in this movie is probably a substitute teacher actually trying to teach. Like teach a lesson. This is an academy, so I get that. But then also she asked this question. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Percy raises his hand to answer. She calls on him, and then his dyslexia kicks in, and he's like, I don't know. And it's like, bro, why are you raising your hand to answer a question?
I don't think he did raise his
hand. He did raise his hand? Okay.
I think the person in front of him had their hand raised.
Oh, was that it?
And he had his head down, and she somehow called on him. I thought that was weird, because it stuck out to me. I didn't know how she knew his name.
Oh, yeah, good
point. If she's a substitute teacher, but then it comes out that why she knows,
It's the kind of thing that, like, all of the gods and anything magical, like, they just know who you are.
and it could be, again, a good hint to where, like, how would she know his name? Oh, because she's not a person. She's a fury. Is this movie more clever than I thought? That's a running bit of ours now, is don't make a dumb fucking movie more intelligent than
it
actually is.
Stop making it too clever.
But I'll give it that. Okay. He gets through all the stuff, and the intrusive actually under the water. And he's there for 7 minutes and he can only think in there. He's very clear here about his ADHD and his dyslexia. And while I don't think they did it maybe accurately to, you know, no one has to say if they have ADHD or dyslexia or whatever. But if one of y'all do and you want to give some insight, that's fine. But I did like that they tried to, like you said, give this like the positive representation to where if a kid who had it and struggled with it, it can be like, oh, it actually might mean something else. And we see that with Grover and his crutches. It's actually for his goat legs. And Mr. Bruning, Pierce Brosnan, Bunning or something like that. That was a stretch where he's like a whole centaur, but it's kind of in the wheelchair. But you know what? It's a movie. It's the mist and the mirage. I can take it as that. But I did like that this had an attempt at that representation to kids with disabilities.
I was thinking about that as well, because I don't have dyslexia or anything, but I know my little cousin does. And I've always been intrigued as to how that would kind of manifest in your day-to-day life. Like how does it feel? How does it look? I'm pretty certain it doesn't. Well, I'm not pretty certain. I'm sure it doesn't look how it looked in the film, but it was quite an interesting visual representation of that.
No, I deal with it every day. Like, obviously students every day. And I remember reading some papers and this one kid that had it, and it was, I'd never seen it before. but all the words were fine. Grammatically, it was fine, but it was like every four letters was almost like reversed or off for every like three or four words. And so I looked and I'm just like, oh, okay. And then I've asked people what it is. And they're like, yeah, it just doesn't like add up, which apparently I've learned is a big reason why ASL, American Sign Language, is becoming a much bigger foreign language, is because it seems like more people are having dyslexia or something. And to learn a foreign language with it is hard enough. So then they're going to American Sign Language. So I was like, oh, that's a good little byproduct of it. And so Percy goes home to his, is this a three-story apartment? And Alyssa, you can explain this. Is this some New York magic where he's going up? Is he, he's just going up steps, right? This is not, it looks like he's going up to, because he walks in the door. Well, before, he walks in the door, and I swear, as soon as he walks in the door, he yells at his mom or yells for his mom or something like that. I'm like, well, he couldn't be on the first floor and then walking up the steps. Is this a fucking three-story apartment?
Those exist. There are buildings like that called brownstones. They're most common in like the West Village, specifically in other parts of the city, like Brooklyn, Jersey City, that sort of thing. Those are almost like little house, like townhouses or row houses. Where Percy is living, in the books, he lives in the Upper East Side, which is meant to be kind of nicer. The building that they have in the book, in the show or the film, definitely looks like a single apartment, like single apartments. So what you probably have is like they either have the floor or like part of a floor.
That's what I thought it looked like. It looked like an apartment in a building with, you know, maybe two or three others.
Big city life, my suburban ass knows nothing of it.
You need to come back.
I, you know what? I will never need an excuse not to go to New York. I love New York. It's a great city. There's always something there. It's always an adventure. There's always a story. Like I said, if you want a story, just get on the subway for a little bit of amount. So somebody not from there, you're going to see something fucking crazy. A native New Yorker won't bat an eye yet, but I'll just be like, holy shit. Did that just happen? People are like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's every day here.
Oh, I would love to go. I've only obviously ever been to Texas. Yeah, I would love to go to New York. I think that I don't have, I've never had a desire to go to many places in America apart from Texas and maybe like LA and New York, and that's it. Not LA, Las Vegas, sorry, and then New York.
Yeah, LA sucks. Don't go to LA.
I would only go for Tim and Valerie.
There you go. Only Tim and Valerie.
I'm biased. I'm very biased.
Yeah, clearly. But as someone who's right in the middle of it, who's splitting the difference in between, no offense, Tim and Valerie, but yes, give me New York all day long over LA, just because you can get around easier. It's actually a planned city. Yeah. It's not a suburban sprawl like LA is there. Oh, but yeah,
so good.
Yeah, there's our LA bashing right there. Okay, so he gets in there, and then Joe Pantoliano here, Joey Pants, Ralph Cifaretto from The Sopranos, an amazing job. Apparently he walks in from 1950, Woman, Where's My Bia, and this guy is the worst.
Yeah, this took me by surprise. Yes. It took me by Gabe surprise Ugliano. A lot. Yeah, yes. Ugliano is just hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's just instant, dislikable, horrible man.
Yeah, I was going to say it was more like walking in on like a domestic violence or domestic disturbance here. Because again, and for some reason, as explained later, Percy's mom puts up with it. You can be of any age and nobody will ever like to be told something and be like, you just don't understand it.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, we'll try. But she can't explain
just
it. So I can get that.
Yeah.
Yes. And he's like, just tell me. She can't. We'll see why later. And I can imagine how tough that would be for a mom.
Yeah. I think she says something like, he's been good to them in ways you will never understand. And that would be so infuriating.
As a kid, especially. Right. But the way that he's been good is simply he smells like shit.
I cackled laughing when that was the reveal. I was like, that's why she's been with him, because he stinks.
Because he stinks so bad, it masks the smell.
Yeah, like demigods have a very powerful, like, aura, and set, like, they're monsters are attracted to them. And for whatever reason, Gabe is so repulsive on multiple levels that they've been able to live in peace for many years.
He's so smelly, he hides, the demigod, because no one knows.
They do call him Smelly Gabe.
Yes.
Percy does call him Smelly Gabe in the books.
So we get a little bit more kind of going on here. And y'all remember, and again, I'm only saying it because Chris Columbus directed it. You remember in Harry Potter at the beginning when everything just flowed so smoothly and there's an interesting, coherent narrative? Yeah, there's none of that shit here. This is so herky-jerky, jumping from scene to scene. For instance, when he gets on the, not the railing, the emergency exit, I guess we would call that, the fire exit. when he's out there. He just
fire
goes
escape. Oh yeah,
fire escape. There you go. He just goes out there for like 3 seconds, and then that was it. And it's like, okay, nothing flowed at this time. And I think by now, you never want to judge a movie this quickly, but by now you can just tell, like, yeah, there was a magic in those Harry Potters, and I think that magic was simply like a good written script. That this was not.
Well, I also wonder, like, I don't know too much about the production of this film, but I wonder if they like shot more than they used, so they kind of cut all their scenes really short, or if they're, I don't know, because I can't imagine like setting up like the entire camera and all of the crew for like a 3 second like fire escape shot. That feels silly. So I wonder if they did have like more that they just cut out in post.
I did notice on the IMDb when I was looking at Chris Columbus's IMDb. Not that it's been super reliable for me recently, but there was the release of this film, and then a year later, this film's deleted scenes as like a separate release. So maybe they released a whole bunch of extra stuff.
Well, you can say, do y'all notice how long this movie was?
Just over...
Yeah, 2 hours.
Just under 2 hours.
An hour 59. That I was very grateful, especially by the end. As I'm watching, I was grateful that this was under 2 hours. But again, something like this, a movie where you're introducing a whole world and all that, this is the type of movie where you can go 220, maybe even up to 230 if it all fits in there. So whatever they cut with what they left in, what the hell would they have left out that would have been extraneous to this?
I would expect a film like this. You know, I kind of relate it to like the Narnia films, the Harry Potter films, which I imagine the first one always being so much larger and grander.
I saw that in theaters and haven't seen any of the other ones or that one since.
The first one's awesome.
Is it?
Yes.
Alyssa, have you seen it?
I watched past the first one. I think I want to say they made two, maybe three.
I think they made three because Prince Caspian was the third one.
Yeah.
No, Don Treader. Don Treader was the third one. And Caspian was the second one, right?
I feel like they did three, but I can't be sure.
Lucy, you're British. You should know this. Narnia.
I'm sorry. I'm one of the characters named Lucy. One of the only characters that makes it through most of the series. Lucy.
So everyone is called Lucy recently. Oh my God.
Fallout series coming out. Who's the main character? What's her name?
What did you put a screenshot in, like, Lucy is nice, but she is naive. That's how they described their new main character. I was like, awesome.
But it was so good. It was Lucy is nice, period. Lucy is naive.
I swear, I've never met that many people in real life called Lucy, but every main character TV series is Lucy. And the only other people that I say people I meet, I always say this, I meet more dogs than I do people called Lucy. And they're always like a Labrador, a nice, lovely little chubby black Labrador. And I'm like, is it called Lucy? 9 times out of 10, it's called Lucy. But yeah, every character in Cyberpunk Edge Runners, the main character is Lucy.
Yes.
Yeah, or everywhere.
I feel like that's a good measure of like the character of your name, though. If people are so happy to name their pets and dogs that, I feel like that's lovely.
I love a Labrador. Yeah, I'm happy.
You have that. Alyssa has a badass name, so like that's an awesome name. And I'm over here just Brett. Like my name's never gonna go into anything fantastical or medieval fantasy. It's never gonna be like Duke Brett. No, never.
We need to write something.
I wouldn't even like it because I'd be like, oh, Brett, that's cool. I'm like, no, I can't take that serious. I can't take that. No. We're only supremely shitty Supreme Court justices and washed up Packer quarterbacks who are also shitty. So the only Bretts known are horrible men. can a good Brett come up? Not me, though. I've got too much of a past. Okay, so they move on. They get to this museum and we're introduced to, is it Mr. Brunner.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to call him Pierce. Pierce Brosnan here again. He's trying so hard, but I'm just like, oh, he's so awesome in everything he does. He doesn't belong here. But going through this thing, apparently Percy's brain is hardwired to ancient Greek and not English, which I guess is his form of dyslexia. And I was like,
I loved that.
Yep.
You did? How
it was quite clever.
Is that how dyslexia works?
Maybe.
I was like, your brain being hardwired for a language is fascinating. I'm sure pathologists would be all into that. I don't know. But either way, Mrs. Dodds, the substitute, who's the creepiest looking woman ever, doing a great job of being creepy, takes Percy into another room, a cordoned off room, not to have illicit, illegal underage sex, but to turn
that
into
was a big red flag.
Oh, I know. As soon as I did, I was like, how family friendly is this movie? But no, that wasn't it. It was to turn into a fury and attack him, which afterwards, I was going to say, Pierce Brosnan and Grover, again, played by Branty Jackson, play the pronoun game by saying he, him, him, by not explaining it to him. And then they give him the pen.
I was so thrown off by this pen. And I was proud of Percy, because if those two were stood talking about me but not giving me any context as to what the hell is going on, I would have went so mad at them. And he just goes along with it. He just follows them. I'm like, no, wait, what the fuck was that? Explain to me what's going on.
He has a lot of patience for what's going on.
He does, bless him. Yeah.
I mean, it's so interesting because, like, the thing that I was telling you guys about, the books are meant to be middle grade, and there's been a lot of talk and like about the production. They've been releasing early production images for the new series, and a lot of the monster like designers for the new series have talked about, like, how are we going to make things scary but not so scary that they're still age appropriate, so having that kind of like right level of fear. And as soon as like the fury popped up, I was like, this feels weird, like this feels like I realized what I was getting into when Mrs. Dodds like changed into the fury, and I was like, I don't know if I'm on board. But
it
we're
was
gonna
freaky.
See, she was scary. She was definitely scary, and then they only get worse, I think, like the Minotaur, mm-hmm. and then Hades, when he's in like his demon form, is so scary.
That's like Baleful Balrog, like and it reminded me a lot of what was his name from Thor, the destroyer of worlds and what have you, the one that Taika directed.
Oh, the beginning of Ragnarok. Taika Waititi.
Yes,
yeah, Ragnarok.
The beginning of Ragnarok. Yeah.
Yeah, see,
reminded me a lot of that.
See, I guess because the Hades was just a devil, a monster I'd seen before. A Minotaur, I've always loved like old Greek stuff, so I've seen stuff about the Minotaur. This freaked me out, one, because it was a woman, and that's the scariest thing to me ever, is besides that, is joking. Anybody know what that? This was just because, one, it's flying. Anything flying will always be scarier to me. It just, something can be just fine. As soon as it starts flying, I'll freak the fuck out. And then it was almost, it was like she was nude. And at that point, it just seemed more primal, and the shrieking and the screaming just did it to me. So, yeah, I was kind of taken aback that this was the first like introduction to monsters.
To me, it was the women from Van Helsing. That's who she reminded me of.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember who I mean?
Yes,
the screeching vampire women that's exactly who she reminded me of. Awful.
All right, so they realize they have to get out, that they've found him, whoever it is, they haven't explained yet. They go back to the apartment, and Grover assaults Gabe right here, beats him up, as he'll say later, the cripple attacked me and kidnapped the mom. I was just like, oh, yeah, that's kind of being used right there. And then they head to this camp in a Chevelle SS. Oh, my God. That was the car I always wanted when I was a kid. That was the first car I wanted. Oh, man. Old American muscle. Chevelle. Mopar, like a Challenger. Did y'all ever have a car that y'all like really wanted? Like a dream car when you were just getting your license?
My dream car was...
No? Oh, New York. Yeah, I was like,
New Yorker. Mine was a Mazda MX-5. I don't know if we have all the same cars here. But my mum's friend had one, and was it called a Mazda? Mazda MX-5.
A Miata? Is it a Miata?
No, Mazda.
Okay, so I Googled Mazda MX-5, and all that's coming up is a Miata.
Like maybe it's a UK thing. I think it's a UK thing.
Oh, no, here it is. I see it right here. Roads. Maybe it is. Yeah, I don't remember an MX-5 being too big.
Yeah, it's just a cute little sports car with the soft top. My mum's friend had one, and I loved it so much. And I remember so specifically, or so clearly, one day I went out of school, and my mum had sent her friend to pick me up in her Mazda MX-5, and I was so excited.
Beaming.
Yeah, but I never got one. No, I still have the same car that I got when I was 16. So,
damn, that's pretty nice too. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I love my car. I love it so much.
Yeah, my first car was a 90 Firebird Formula, T-topped, and I ragged the shit out of that. On the way to golf practice, I was going to say blasting Blink 182. And
nice.
Like, the day. That dates me there.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey, so I had a 2005 Toyota Corolla.
Nice.
Named Caesar.
Oh.
You named it?
Well, between me and my two close friends, our cars ended up being Caesar, Jasper, and Xavier.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I've never named a car.
Mine is Marco.
I name what a lot the hell? Of things.
Wait, is Marco's that a girl good. Thing? Is that a girl thing?
I don't know.
I'm going to say it's a girl thing because I have it. No. Yeah. I've got an 07 Prius now. I think I just always called it. I just call it the Beast, right? From World's End. I just call it the Beast. Yeah, it gets in there. I'll call it something like that.
Mine the is money Marco saver. Still. Yeah.
Marco. There you go.
Marco.
All right, so on their way there, the movie Twister breaks out with these flying cows. A Minotaur attacks, but they get to the Camp Half-Blood, which again, Percy can then see as it goes in. But nope, no room for mortals. And the mom is kept out.
This kind of broke my heart a bit, to be honest. She gets like evaporated. I thought she was dead.
That would have been really, really.
So does Percy, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was bothering me how much it was kind of glossed over. Like she died. Yeah. And then it was just like, okay, my mom is dead.
Okay.
Like,
so I'll admit this. I never thought she was dead. I thought she was captured because, like you said, that they're just like, oh man, I guess she's gone. All right. Time to go explore the camp. And
yeah,
I'll lead
so
up.
Weird.
It was so weird, but I'll say this. Okay. I know anybody who's a longtime listener to the show will always hear me and Lucy say that when something is really good, whether it's something like a Harry Potter, whether it's Game of Thrones, something like that, it's the cast. And while I was glowing about the cast before, I should say I was glowing about the supporting cast. And while I do agree that maybe the characters aren't the best, and I know some people personally that may love this guy, Logan Lerman, so I come in peace with these words. Mm-hmm. He's not good enough for this role, or if the script isn't good enough, he's not good enough to carry the bad script.
I don't know him from anything else.
Was he Perks of Being a Wallflower?
I recently saw him in Bullet Train.
He was in Bullet
that
Train?
That sounds right.
He is Perks. Yeah, he is Perks as well.
Okay, yeah.
He was the son in Bullet Train.
Okay.
The one that just starts.
Is that movie good?
I am not action thrillers person. I get so much anxiety watching shows like this.
Too much action.
It's very much in the realm of like Kingsman, kind of like that level of like action and gore.
Oh, okay.
But it was fun for what it was. It was very fun and silly, like high cast, like star cast film. So I feel like you guys are gonna like it. Like it's Brad Pitt being silly. And a lot of things are happening. There's a lot of like high intense action scenes. And for the parts that I enjoyed it very much. It was a very stressful experience for me, but I would recommend the film.
That seems like a perfect flight movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Like to watch. Yeah. Yeah. On the airplane.
And there's a good crossover with Bullet Train and The Lost City because both those movies are in production. So you get kind of cameos from both.
Oh, cool.
They're both The Lost City. I think only ever watched it on planes, but I've watched it multiple times on multiple flights. So,
That may be on the Warsaw flight that by now will be weeks old, but is only like 5 days.
How
away.
Long is your flight? It must be 10 hours.
It's 9.5 to Frankfurt and then an hour and a half or an hour 40 to Warsaw.
Oh my goodness.
I don't really care anymore. Goodness. I've done it enough. I'll just get hammered drunk and fall asleep on the plane. No, I never sleep on the plane. Or I need to do that actually this time to actually sleep
you
on
need
the way
to,
over there.
Yeah.
I don't like to sleep, though. Yeah. I mean, I like it, but I can't do it. Logan Lerman was also in 2011's The Three Musketeers, which, yeah, they make one of those like every 4 years. But I only want to see that because Christoph Waltz is Cardinal Richelieu, and that's got to be good. He's got to be good in that, right? He's never bad. Yeah, Christoph Waltz never bad.
He's always good.
Lucy, on Amazon Prime is Django. I will watch Django.
Watch that. Month. No, actually, don't watch that on the plane. That needs to be
TV.
Oh,
no. Oh, God, no. Yes.
That needs to be TV. It's so good.
But I will get Django watch this month. But yeah, Percy has a pen, pulls it out, and it's actually a short sword. It's not really the biggest, but he knows how to handle it a little bit. But he ends up killing this Minotaur. I'm assuming he kills it because it kind of falls down to the ground, but somehow the mom gets kidnapped with a broken piece of the horn, and he faints. And yes, that goes into that we talked about. He was out for 3 days. And you know who else was out for 3 days? Our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
To introduce
right.
you to him. Yeah. So, no, but like, as I mentioned before, when they came back, he's like, oh, my mom's alive. I'm like, yeah, she's alive. Wait, did he think she was dead? Because it was so understated.
It's so blasé.
Yeah.
Even in the moment where she kind of evaporates or whatever happens, she turns into the mist kind of, doesn't she? But obviously he goes into fight mode, but then it's just Okay, yeah. We're not going to talk about it. No, yeah, exactly. No grief at all. It's bizarre.
Yeah, but in a way, though, if they did actually try to grieve, I wouldn't have bought it, right? I mean, he couldn't have pulled... I don't want to bag on him anymore. I'm sorry. Okay. But how about this? We now enter Grover, his friend, who again had was on crutches. He is a junior protector, a satyr, doesn't have his horns yet. So there's his arc. So Alyssa, is there a big difference, I should say, between him and the books? Did they change a lot for this or leave something out?
I think the biggest change in Grover's character is how provocative he is in the film.
Yeah.
He is very horny, for lack of a better word, all of the time, and despite not having his horns. And I feel like in the book, in actual years, satyrs age slower than mortals. So in theory, he's probably about 24, but looks and is 12, for like lack of a better.
That makes his horniness even worse if he's hanging around high school girls all day.
Oh, that is weird.
I feel like it's not the same. I feel like it's not the same in the film. Like, I feel like he is the same age. But yeah, so he has enough life experience in the books to be able to protect Percy and knows what's going on, has the context of the world and whatever. But yeah, he is, he's in the books, I would say he's more of like a druid monk, whereas in the show, it's, I don't know, something weird.
Horn dog bro is what he is. Wingman.
Yeah. So strange.
Yeah. So that was, we'll just get to that note that I have, because it's the next one over there. It was Grover sees the daughters of Aphrodite and he runs off to an apparent reverse gangbang in the middle of the day. And it's just like, what are these girls doing? There's like a dozen of them. They're calling him over. He like clicks his heels and you can see him like getting fucking erect right there. And it's like, next thing here is, why does this movie so unnecessarily horny?
Yeah, it was out of nowhere. This group of girls just
baffled.
Hey,
daughters of Aphrodite.
And then he comes running. Yeah, he comes running real fast.
Yeah, and it's not like the whole thing, it just tonally just feels so confusing and wrong as a book reader as well. So I don't know. Yeah, and then he's just like, oh, they're daughters of love, so you know where that goes. And it's
It's
maybe
like,
no.
No, I think the 8-year-olds in the audience or the 10-year-olds don't know where that's going. Maybe the uncle does. Like, oh, okay, he can get into it. But like, no, movie. Like, that was, yes, the tone is what it is. Because apparently he's supposed to be grieving. We're supposed to be grieving. And then we learn like, oh, he does all that. And it's just like, okay, get on your own same page, movie.
You literally lost your kid's mom yesterday. Like, you done fucked up, and now
your best friend, your protectee, I guess what it would be, needs it the most. He's learning all this, and so so Grover is Brandon T. Jackson, who was excellent in Tropic Thunder. Have y'all seen that? Any of y'all?
No, I haven't.
Literally just watched it for the first time last week.
Did you?
Oh, what'd you think?
I think it's, again, like, just watching some of the action, I was like, what is happening? This is so stressful. It's obviously a very, very, very silly satirical film. So, like, those aspects of it, I could enjoy it. We did have to watch it in two parts because it got, like, too late.
Yeah.
And we had to stop. It was a strange experience, but it wasn't bad. It was not to yuck on anyone's yum. Probably wasn't my tea.
Okay. Yes, I can definitely see that. And it has, Robert Downey Jr., an Australian playing an American in blackface, playing a black American in blackface.
Oh my
but,
God.
But again, like,
Adam Sandler, it is.
Yes, it's, let's not even go into that minefield of what it is, but it's not Soul Man, okay? It's not C. Thomas Howell from the 80s and Soul Man and that type of blackface. It is satirical in what it is, but the movie trailers from that is probably the most problematic thing. Simple John or Simple whatever it was, Ben
Simple
Stiller.
Simple Jack.
Jack, yeah, so that whole movie there. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but Branchy Jackson as Al Pacino is very, very good in the movie.
Yeah.
I liked him there.
I didn't make that connection. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He looked familiar and I didn't know why. Even when I was watching Tropic Thunder last week. And then, yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't been in anything since 2019. So I don't know if that's by choice or not, but I don't know. Good luck to him in all his future endeavors. I didn't think he was that bad. I just think what he was having to say was just not good.
It's corny, isn't it?
It's,
I find
so
that with
corny.
A lot of the dialogue in general in this film, just kind of... fell really flat for me. It's weird because we've said how the tone of the film feels like it was made for like young adults, teenagers, even adults sometimes. But then the way they had their characters speaking was like they were talking to a child, explaining what was happening, just being like really, really on the nose about things. And that every time they said something, I'd be like, oh, okay, thanks. Yeah, I know.
Okay. Like, we get it.
It's like what you said. There's so much that they have to explain in a first film of a series that, mm-hmm. like, for everything that they included that wasn't in the books, it feels like they lost they kind of lost the time to actually, like, explain it in a way that feels, like, wonderful and mystical and, like, you're mm-hmm. going into a new world and, like, you're figuring out all this stuff and, like, we're doing all the world building in a way that the audience can understand. Like you said, Brad, it's just, like, a shitstorm of information and facts and, like, locations, and it's jarring.
I almost wish they wouldn't have even given us that first scene with Poseidon and Zeus. They just throw us to Percy where he's struggling with things and, whoa, why is he hearing a voice? Why is he making out Greek?
That's what they do in the books.
Is it real? Yeah. Oh, well, there you fucking go. See, I knew it was going to come up, that it was going to be like, I knew something was a bit. I just don't know why they did it, though, because then we would have discovered it with him. Why is he getting attacked? What the bolt? What the fuck are they talking about? And then they learn, oh, Grover's in on it. Oh, the Pierce Brosnan is in on it. And then we would have discovered it with him and wouldn't have to have been, like Lucy said, basically just beaten over our head of like a little kid being told exactly what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I think you like nailed the journey of discovery in the books, and that it does that so well of just like you're with Percy the whole time. So like all of this about like we know and he know, like we know he's the son of Poseidon and he immediately learns he is, like we're discovering that with everybody
and we're
else.
Shocked with him and like so, yes, absolutely. So much better.
Yeah.
Speaking of another demigod though, they're introduced to Annabelle, daughter of Athena. Annabeth. Is it Annabeth? Okay, well, fuck me. That shows how much I was. Yeah. Annabeth, daughter of Athena, who is my favorite Greek god or goddess, has always been since I was a kid. It's goddess of wisdom and like war battle strategy. Two things I've always liked, you know, historical aspects or wanted to be. Who is y'all's favorite Greek god or goddess?
Ooh.
Got to be someone that comes to mind immediately. It's just like, is it Hades? It's a lot of people's Hades or like Aphrodite are two big ones.
I will jump in whilst you're thinking. I don't have a favorite Greek god. Like, I'm so uneducated on Greek mythology. Like, I have no idea about it. So like when I watch stuff like this, I love it. I want to get all into it, but I don't know where to even begin.
Well, I was going to say, do you like to drink and have a good time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Dionysius.
Dionysus is
Dionysus. There we go. You got
I'll
him
look
right
her
there.
Up.
It's a hymn.
Oh, it's a hymn? Oh, yeah. I don't want my favorite to be a man one. Yeah.
But he likes the party. Okay, Alyssa.
Is there not a woman that likes the party?
Yeah. Artemis. Artemis is badass too. Goddess of the hunt.
Oh,
Artemis
nice.
Is cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. Alyssa, you got one?
Oh, my goodness. Artemis is pretty cool. Although everybody, I think she's very cool as like an archer. Less cool as like a person to follow, and I feel like the idea of Apollo seems pretty cool.
Apollo, yeah, there you go. Yeah. I always wanted that. If I ever had like two daughters, I would like to name Athena Artemis. Like they seem like unique, but not crazy unique.
Yeah,
I don't know. They seem in that sense, but I probably won't have to worry about that anyway.
Never know.
Get dogs.
dogs is an easy one.
Or cat. I like cats.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get a cat next year.
Yeah,
hamster. Well, I want them to at least know like something of what it is. A hamster.
We have a delivery service here called Hermes.
Yes, that's. Mm-hmm. Oh no, I'm thinking of Hermes is also a
luxury handbag company.
That's what it is. Okay, that's what I thought.
Hermes.
Yes. There you go.
And I
hard air quotes on it.
When I first moved into my house, it was like a whole new build estate, and I was one of the first people to move in, and some of the houses were unfinished and they were getting pigeons, and all these horrible birds were making nests like in the houses.
Horrible birds.
Yeah, no, but like they were making all these nests in the houses and like messing them up and everything. So they hired there's a local falconry like on the other side of town, and they this hawk, and the hawk basically just flies around the estate for like a few hours every like weekend, and he scares off the pigeons, and his name is Hermes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's a big hawk. He's lovely.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like in the Hansa and like the Breakfast and Middle Cleric community, mm-hmm. one of the girls is like a abatement falconer as her job. So she does that on like trash sites in Texas. So she takes out her hawks and falcons and scares off seagulls, and that's literally her job.
Yeah. Dang. And it says they don't even have to do anything aggressive, just their presence scares off the other birds. They're so badass.
The hawks just come in and bully all the hungry birds coming around.
Yeah. I've got some pictures of him because he comes and sits up on my fence.
There you go.
Let him come around.
All right. Well, who wants to play some capture the flag?
And oh yeah.
They get in this fight and we get this kind of a duel showdown with Annabeth and Percy. And I got a big chuckle at Annabeth saying, "I always win," and Percy's just like, "Well, I always lose." So I was like, "Hey, self-deprecation. I like it." I laughed at that.
Yeah, I feel like that's totally right. For if they've gotten anything like moderately okay, just those two pieces of dialogue, it's like, okay, check the box. Like that feels correct.
He did seem to be down on himself a lot, where he didn't think he could do anything because of the disabilities. So appreciate that. Again, self-deprecating humor is awesome. But what is also awesome is, holy shit, these are actual swords?
Like, yeah, I didn't understand this.
He's getting cut up, and she kicks his ass for good reason because, you know, she's been trained in sword fighting forever. How long? Daughter of fucking Athena puts this little bitch in the water, you know, like knocks him down, wins it, and then he cures his wounds and then gets up, and it gives him this power. Then he starts just kicking the shit out of everybody, including her. And I guess this is a good lesson for everybody that it's not about training or learning from mistakes or anything like that. All that matters is your blood. And I hate this shit so much. I don't like it.
Yeah, I could understand him being healed and everything and not knowing his water powers. But for him to then suddenly know how to fight is a bit off, isn't it?
Yeah, like it's one thing if it would have been Zeus, because Zeus is like the most powerful, right? He's the god or the head of the gods or whatever it is. Like it made sense that. That was Hercules, right? Hercules' dad was Zeus because Hera hated him. I believe so.
Yeah.
That's why he's so powerful and why he's a strong demigod. But yeah, for him to do this, it's just like, oh yeah, these people who have been training and doing everything, he just kicks their ass. And I truly think that's a bad lesson because there are so many bad lessons from 90s sports movies about kids playing, you know, little league sports or whatever it is, and they suck. And all of a sudden they get uniforms and one ringer comes in and they believe so hard that they go out and beat the well-trained teams. I'm like, that's not fucking reality. That's a bad lesson that kids would take, that so many kids my age from the 90s took. And I wonder how many might have taken it from this.
It does feel like just that like savior complex kind of thing, or that like chosen child kind of thing. I like when you mentioned that, I was just like, Mighty Ducks. I mean, you're wearing an Oregon Ducks shirt right now, but
Mighty Ducks,
Mighty
absolutely.
Ducks is a classic. Love Mighty Ducks. Yeah, it just feels so overpowered and so.
I felt very met. And because it was just, I don't know how long we are into the film at the moment, but it almost just came out of nowhere. It felt like he's been here hardly any time at all, and he's suddenly overpowering everyone. So I'm not impressed by it at all. I'm not like, oh, wow, he's worked so hard to get this. It's just kind of meaningless in a way.
No wits, no outsmarting. He just happened to do it because the voice in his head told him to put his arms in the water.
Mm-hmm. And he gets a big ego from this as well. I feel like he gets very cocky all of a sudden.
Even the fight scene itself felt like the dynamics in there felt really weird. Like everybody's standing around. And obviously I feel like that happens a lot in films where just like you're watching, you've like kind of cipher and everybody's like watching you guys battle it out. But I don't know. It was like a weird... It was a weird dynamic because Annabeth was just so, cocky about it. Like, I always win. I never lose. And then she goes to town on him. And it was just like a weird, like it was uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. And then he takes the flag and blue defeats red. So Athens defeats Sparta here. Revenge for the Peloponnesian War, which I'm sure everybody else was thinking that it was a reversal of that. Yeah. Lucy's just like, yep, there it is. They got him in there. Those Persians will now get them. But this party afterwards, Hades crashes it again. Scary, where he just starts bombing the place, basically firebombing the place. Percy, again, this hero of sorts, needlessly does not step forward Like when he's saying, "Where's Percy Jackson?" Percy's just like, "I'm 7'4". He blows this stuff up. Nice roasted pig goes to waste. And Hades says that he will give his mother back if he brings him the bolt.
I was really shocked by this, that he didn't step forward before this.
It took like four napalms of doing it.
He didn't step forward. And I thought, he's this big hero. He's got this big ego. He's the best fighter. And he's like cowering behind everyone as he blows everything up. And he's like, nope, I'm hiding back here.
Yeah, he was not having that.
I feel like it kind of tracks with like the Percy that we've met throughout the film so far. Like he gets called on and in like class and he's just like, nope, not doing that, not raising my hand. Mm-hmm. And then for when was the other time? Like they were trying to get when he had his headphones in and Mr. Brunner, Chiron tries to like call on him and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, what? Like not paying attention. So I feel like, you know, it's tracking.
Yeah, that's a good point, and we'll be a step forward. I do like how when Percy starts to leave, that Annabeth calls it an actual quest, that she's never been on a quest, and she's like, yeah, this is a quest. I'm like, you know what, they're just going to call it that. That's fine, because I'm going to see it as that this is, again, like a lot of movies and storytelling is. It's very video gamey. It's we need to get three MacGuffins. Where do we need to go in order? You know, and they're on their way there. They need to get into the underworld, though, where Hades is. So they go to see Luke, who I kind of thought Luke was bad just because this guy, no offense to the actor, but the guy just kind of looks like a shitheel. And it's just like, this guy looks like he's an asshole. So I'm thinking he's going to be bad.
I never put it together that he would be the bad guy. I was just a bit curious about him because everybody else is living in this, not medieval style, but it feels kind of old school, everything.
And Renaissance fair, as he calls it.
Go for it. Yeah, yeah. And he's got like computers. It looks like he's playing Call of Duty. I couldn't see the screen properly, but it did look like he was playing that.
Yeah.
So yeah, he just seemed a bit out of place. And he says that his dad is Hermes, the messenger. So he's able to give them some advice on how to get into the underworld. But it never clicked to me that he would be the one that stole the lightning.
Like, I didn't think that he was going to be bad. I just thought if he was,
he is.
He is just because of that. Yeah, not until we saw the bolt in the shield. And then I was like, oh, okay, right. So he actually is bad because he gave him that shield. The guy just looks like he's an asshole. Which, yeah, gives them these flying shoes and a way to find Persephone's pearls, which can be used to get out of the underworld. There's three in the U.S., and lo and behold, where's that first one?
Where
in
was it?
Jersey. Hey, going to Jersey here.
Dirty Jersey,
going to the Jersey Shore. Yeah. And every time I hear Jersey, I just think The Sopranos and I hear Polly Walnuts and all them in my head. So yeah, I just thought, okay, Jersey, good. Good. It's always good to be in Jersey.
Everyone shits on New Jersey. It's fine. It's great. It's lovely.
It's the Garden State, right?
It is the Garden State. And I feel like people always think about Jersey Shore, which had delightful spinoffs, Alabama Shore and something in the UK.
Yeah, we had one here in Newcastle, Geordie Shore. Yeah.
Geordie.
So that's right. That's right.
Oh, man. Now I'm left out. I'm the only one that doesn't have a shore.
Oh.
The hell? There's got to be
what
something.
What would it be?
What is what?
What would it be?
What would it be? Galveston Beach.
But you don't have a shore there.
Yeah, we got a ton of beaches. Yeah, South Padre. Really? Oh, the whole Gulf of Mexico is all a beach. South Padre Island's popular.
What's the most like Real Housewives saddest? Like,
wasn't there one in Dallas?
You think of like Jersey Shore?
Like,
yeah, like where would you put if you had that like if you had trash TV in Texas, where would it be?
Oh, okay. Dallas. It'd have to be Dallas. Like it really would. Everyone would probably say Houston because nobody likes the big cities unless you're from there. But it would be Dallas would probably be just the most fake. The most vapid fake people are Dallas. Yeah, 100%. I'm not from Dallas. I don't claim Dallas. So unless I'm out of the country, it's easier to say I'm from Dallas. Because then people are like, oh, Dallas. Okay. Then I just yee-haw it up. All right. So, yes, they get to Jersey in this Garden Emporium there. And Grover gives a, 2000 late joke that this place definitely needs an extreme makeover. And I slammed my fist through the screen.
What was that? Who presented that? Because I that made it over here. We used to watch the one where it was like, move that bus.
Yes, that's what it is, right?
Absolutely unhinged.
Yeah,
Ty something, yeah.
Ty Pennington.
No, Ty Pennington, yeah. And they used to like revamp these entire houses in a week and give them the most, the children, I felt so bad for them because they would be like, oh yeah, I did ballet once when I was, you know, three. And then they'd come back and they'd have an entire ballet studio as their bedroom. And it's like, I'm 16 and I haven't, like, what? And it was just absolutely wild. So yeah, I loved that show when I was younger.
I've also heard that they were really bad for tax purposes because it was because they'd give them this house and the property taxes, which depending
they
on
can't afford it.
Where you are in the U.S., like Texas has a massive property tax because we don't have a state income tax. So those largely prop up our excellent school systems. And so a lot of people would get in there where they couldn't afford the house that they were then given.
Yeah.
But they demolished their old house, so they kind of have to sell it and then go. I don't know. It sounds like a pain. Nice gesture, yeah. Of course, but it sounds like a pain. Yeah.
I also heard the construction was like super shoddy on those shows.
It must have been. They did it in a week.
Held up by prayers. Yeah.
Good Lord. I didn't even think about that. They actually built something in a week?
They used to send the families away for a week and they would rebuild an entire house. It's just absolutely
there's no
insane.
Way that was unionized labor, right? they go to a non-union state. Well, there you go. Maybe that's why all those fucking shows are in Texas. So many of those like buying homes or something in there. Maybe that's why. Well, that kind of brings it down. But this place is Medusa's Lair and played by the awesome Uma Thurman, who must not have eaten for a week because she is just chomping this scenery in a way she hasn't done since Batman and Robin.
Yes, it's Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy. And yes, she is having fun with it. I don't know how good the effects have held up, and that some of the effects this movie I think are good. The snakes are fine, except maybe where it kind of hits her head.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Because I thought like the monsters, like the, do you guys call it a minotaur?
I call it
a minotaur. I don't know if that's wrong, but I thought they all looked really good. But yeah, the snakes stood out a little bit.
I actually noticed it when there was a scene, I think right when the car comes through in a bit later, but she gets kind of blasted off to the side. I was like, oh, the snakes actually look quite good in that blast, like behind a bunch of like dust and stuff. And I was like, you know what, that's pretty good. But like up close in the other scenes, it's clearly CGI, obviously. Yeah. But yeah.
As she gets launched through the air. Hey, they did their homework on that one. But hey, want to feel old people? How about Percy using his iPod?
Oh, wow. Yes.
Watch Medusa, the reflection, the metallic
the mirrored
reflection.
Back iPod. I loved iPod. Those.
I never had one.
I didn't have one either, actually.
I think I had one, but I think I had to share it. That was how it was. Yeah, me and my stepbrothers shared it, which is obviously just not what
that's not
for.
Gonna work. That is, that's
like use it for an hour, you use it for an hour.
The whole thing is that, yeah, the like personalized, that.
yeah.
But iPhones were out at this time because first iPhone, I think, was technically 07, mainly 08 when they first, you know, may have gotten in there. But yeah, by 2010, I would say it's almost like a market saturation. That would have been iPhone 2 or 3.
I didn't have an iPhone until 2012.
Yeah, I think I got one a lot later as well, because when I went to university in 2011 and I had a BlackBerry then for like 2 or 3 years. So
business.
Yeah, it was business chic.
It was all business.
tap, tap, tap.
Tap, tap. God, imagine a world with more than like two types of phones.
I don't want it.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
I do kind of miss my Motorola. I used to have a Motorola Pebble.
Yeah, I had... made multiple Motorolas and things. Yeah,
I had the Razor Flip. Seems like almost everybody had one. Yeah.
The Razor was so popular here, but I remember I went to get the Razor in a hot pink and there was none left, so I got a Motorola Pebble instead, and I actually loved the Motorola Pebble because nobody else had it.
I don't know,
I think I had like something called like an Evo or something, and it like opened sideways. It was
so
kind
good
of,
I remember the Sidekick good. The Sidekick I remember was a big one. Veronica Mars had one.
It wasn't
in season
a Sidekick
two.
Yeah,
it wasn't. Okay. Okay, so
no, but it was like a bootleg Sidekick.
Okay, as long as it works, and it would send that. If it sent the text, then it worked. So Percy's iPod, he watched Medusa. Eventually, he makes a play to cut her head off, which they keep wrapped up, and they have their first pearl. With the wrapping the head.
I mean, you can
head,
see
or...
why, like, for Yeah, just like the idea of taking your 8-year-old to see this thing that they love. Ooh. And then they watch someone getting decapitated.
Dude, straight like, decapitation.
Wild.
I thought it was honestly because we had just, from the time of this recording, we just done a couple weeks ago, Lord of the Rings. And there are several just straight orc decapitations in there. And I'm like, I know this movie's PG-13 and I know they have all this fighting, but it's like this family friendly, kid friendly PG-13 in that sense. Yeah. And yes, decapitations, full on being shown, that should automatically be a PG-13, right? Because this movie was PG, and that should right there.
That's it.
Yes, the MPA should be like, okay, you just decapitated something. I know it's not a human, but it's Uma Thurman. Like, that's a PG-13 right there.
Yeah, and they carry her head around for like the rest of the film.
Oh, we see it all the way to the mid-credit scene.
Yeah, we do.
There was a mid-credits. I didn't even see that.
Oh, you didn't see it?
It's, okay. No, as soon as the credits hit, I was like, I have to gone. Go to like a work meeting. Like, like we're done.
We're done. No, I skipped ahead.
I think as soon as I started to pull away and that, just in that final it. Shot, I was like, okay, turn it off.
Wait, maybe you didn't see the end of the movie. That'd be funny if it faded to black and you like it came back up and you didn't see it. Oh, that'll be good. We get there. If you just bounced early.
Oh, no.
Okay, so they get the first pearl, and now on to Nashville, Tennessee, from the Northeast down to the Shield of the South, Tennessee. We get a nice yeehaw from them, because, and of course, they're driving a pickup. So, you know, I guess that's, you know, when in Rome, or in this case, Percy can apparently heal anyone with water, apparently even chlorinated pool water. So like, bro, you can do this. Go be a real living God and start curing people. You will literally be Jesus. You will cure people, make the lame walk. He's right. These gods are fucking, or Luke is right. These gods are fucking selfish.
I didn't even think of that. But yeah, this kind of glossed over. I don't think we see this again of him using his powers to heal anybody else.
No, just him and the girl he likes.
He's just showing off.
I actually don't remember if that's even a thing that he can do in the books. Like he can heal himself, I think, if I'm remembering correctly now. But I don't remember if there are instances of him healing other people, like fucking Katara from Avatar The Last Airbender.
Now that's a movie I haven't seen.
I have not seen that. I feel like Percy Jackson fandom and Avatar The Last Airbender fandom treat their live action adaptations the same.
That is really okay. So that you brought that up, for the people like you and other people I know, we'll still watch this movie again. I think if you watch this movie at 10 or 11 years old, as opposed to like 30 or something like that, it would be a little bit different. But people, Percy Jackson, they don't like this movie. They think it's bad. But the Avatar fans that talk about that movie, it is unspeakable. It's like fucking Voldemort himself. If I bring that up, people are like, don't even say that name. I'm like, the one with M. Night Shyamalan, and they'll like slam their pencils down and be like, don't say that name. Don't talk about it. I'm like, oh shit, I touched a nerve here.
Yeah.
So apparently that movie is just offensively dreadful.
Really?
I have not seen it. I have seen like clips and like GIFs of it. But it's like the chorus on like Reddit and forums and things like that is kind of an inside joke for fans, but it's like, there's no movie, there's no film in Ba Sing Se, and like that's the whole thing.
Is there a new series coming out though? I've seen trailers.
Yes, so hot goss on, I love production gossip.
Yay.
So I've got it all.
Fish.
But yeah, so Netflix bought the rights to create a film. A limited television series. Allegedly, the creators of the original cartoon were unhappy with the direction that Netflix was taking the show. I think like supposedly they were kind of aging it up a little bit. This is all like pre-production hearsay, so who knows? But then they went off, and they've now established Avatar Studios, which is the original. The original shows were produced by Nickelodeon. So anything they do from now on will be their own production house. So I think they might be doing like other films or their television shows all set in the Avatar worlds, but Netflix is specifically doing a live action adaptation of the original cartoon. So we'll see. A lot of the magic of Avatar was the fact that they had a ton of filler episodes and they could play with like a 20 episode season. Netflix is very hard on like the 8 to 10 episode season. But We'll see. They released the first production images a few weeks ago of the cast in costume. And I think they released the first trailer, teaser trailer as well. So you got to see like the...
I forget what it was called, the giant creature.
Yeah. Appa.
Yeah.
Appa and Momo. And like, her name isn't like Jessie, Michaela something. She was credited as like Jessie Flowers, who played Toph, had a reaction video of her watching the trailer and she started crying.
Aww.
So we'll see. It's kind of like there's
cautious
some production
optimism.
Gossip.
Yeah.
But cautious optimism, yeah. Yes, I think is the perfect way to describe it. So, but yeah, a lot of things getting the reboot recently.
I am excited to watch that one because I haven't watched it in so long, but when that was originally on Nickelodeon, the cartoon, I absolutely loved it and it was like nothing else I'd ever seen. So I would quite like to catch up with that one and then maybe see how this live action one goes. But I've never seen this film that people do not speak of.
Nobody requested it for Bad Movie Month. So we in the deadlines passed, so we've dodged that at least. Although now it kind of more... The more I hear that a movie is just so unspeakably bad, the more I really want to see it just to see if it actually is that bad.
Have you seen the original cartoon?
I know nothing about it. Have seen nothing.
Interesting.
I know. So it would be like
then,
me.
Then it might be a good candidate.
As fresh as fresh. But I haven't heard anybody even say that they liked it that didn't know anything about it. Like everything is just it just shit on like crazy.
It's a baffling film. I don't, but like I haven't seen it. So it's like the little pieces I know of it are just like
incoherent. That's what it may be. All right. So this movie's coherent. It's just not very good, but they're in Nashville. Nashville is nicknamed one of the many nicknames it has. One of them is the Athens of the South because it actually does. This is a real thing. This full recreation of the actual Parthenon built, I think it was in 1897 for the centennial of Tennessee in Nashville. And so, yeah, it's a real thing to go to. Also nicknamed Music City for the country music. And my favorite, Smashville.
Oh, I've never heard it called that.
I haven't either, but I looked it up, the nicknames. It said Smashville. And I'm like, that might be just one of those people think locals, like Hotlanta. They're like oh,
Hotlanta,
Smashville.
Yeah.
Hotlanta. Anybody from there's like, don't fucking call it that. We don't call it that.
Or like the Big Apple. Yeah.
Yeah, the Big Apple.
No
there
one
you
calls
go.
New York the Big Apple. Like that. Yeah.
Oh, the Big Apple. Well, then why do they have like the Mets? Don't the Mets have a Big Apple out there?
Oh, I have no idea. I've never seen a Mets game.
Okay. Well, I went out there last year and the ice cream thing that I got is a fucking apple. So if they want people to stop calling it the Big Apple, stop selling stuff that alludes to the Big Apple there. But one thing, oh my God, this is where I fucking lost it almost. They get to this inside the Parthenon and they see the pearl up on this statue. And Annabelle takes out this little hand bow and starts shooting these poor janitors who will learn that maybe aren't so poor janitors. And they're just like, oh, it's only knocking them unconscious. And they're like, oh, okay. How about that fucking guy that dropped 10 feet off the ladder that you shot, who's now fucking brain damaged?
So crazy. It was so crazy.
What the
fuck? Like, this is not okay.
No, that is not okay.
But also the realism of the scene. Wouldn't you notice if your colleagues are just dropping like flies and she's not subtle about like swinging around these columns and like knocking them all off. But like it's like very poor movie magic of just like they cut away. So she does like a fantastical turn and like someone drops and then someone gasps. And it's just like, this is going to look... I imagine, you know, those YouTube videos where they take people like dancing and singing in musicals and put real Foley and sounds to them. So they did that with like High School Musical and you hear them just like the shoes squeaking.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
I saw
so,
one of those.
So awkward. And I feel like if you didn't have the cuts and the camera angles and you just had a single shot or if you were standing on the other side, it would be so awkward.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yes, because she wasn't like quick drawing somebody in that. She was just pulling out the bow and shooting. And it's like, how fantastical, how outrageous can that be? You know, like she's just pointing this hand crossbow at people who aren't looking. Like, we get it. But yeah, I don't know. The guy falling, I literally like went to the side. I almost had to pause it and be like, hold up, that fucking dude just fell. Like on his side also. Mm-hmm. He's fucking dead. If he's not dead, he's paralyzed.
This is how you know you're getting old. Yeah. This is how you know you're getting old, Brett. You're getting concerned
about
your falls.
When somebody, hey, me. No, but yes, when somebody falls down, I'm like, oh damn, I bet that hurt. I'm like, what? He just tripped
in there.
Like,
not funny anymore.
He will feel that for the rest of his life now. It'll heal, but he will feel that. They have to call Luke to figure out like how to work the shoes or whatever. And I want everybody who may not have written this down or noticed it, people watching and y'all too, go back. I should have put the time in there. The delivery, Luke's delivery of he's got to build up speed kind of like a jet. He says this as if he's being fed the words in his ears, as if he's just kind of like, oh, like a jet. As if, yeah, I said the right word, right? It is so weird that why was it delivered this way? And then Chris Columbus, was this the best one? Were you about to get out for the day? Was it overtime? Was that horrible, like that overtime pay having to kick in for people that he just kind of said that? Or did he not remember that line? It is so weird. Please, people, go back and listen and look at his face as he delivers this line. It's awkward as hell.
Oh my God, I didn't pick up on that. I need to go back.
I may almost have to
I skipped 15 seconds when that delivery happened.
Well, like, hell, I missed that her name is Annabeth and not Annabelle. There were absolutely times when I might have just glossed over because I had a drink in there that I might have just been in a, wait, what? What is this movie? Oh shit, this movie's still on.
Actually, I think it was this specific fight with the Hydra that I just like, I was like, I need to get to a meeting in like 15 minutes. I was like, yeah, I was like, I can't watch this 5 minute fight scene.
So the only thing that comes that came out of this fight scene was, and I know Percy, I know not everybody knows things. Okay. Who doesn't know that a Hydra, that you cut the head off a Hydra and two grow back? Who doesn't know that?
Oh, I didn't know that. I have to admit.
Did he not watch Disney's Hercules? Like, this is baffling.
I guess Lucy didn't either.
I didn't, but I feel like, didn't his mom make a point of, like, teaching him about Greek mythology? Like, I feel like he would have known that.
I don't know.
I didn't know that. When she revealed that, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, well, God damn it. No. So I'm saying, this is what usually happens too. I'm like, what kind of simpleton, what kind of idiot didn't know this? Like... And Lucy's like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm like, oh.
Oh, shit. So...
Lucy, it's anyway, naive.
There you go.
Lucy is like, naive. Go back to that.
It goes back to naive. No, honestly, I kind of delivered that on the off chance that maybe Lucy didn't, just to get that. So I always did the bit, what kind of idiot didn't know that? But apparently, Lucy and Percy have this in common. But yes, I guess Medusa's head stops fire now, I guess. Or maybe it turned them to stone. And then right as they started to turn to stone, the fire just does not obey our laws of physics and stops. Either way, it seemed like it was a force field there. Long story short, of that scene that Alyssa skipped ahead, or maybe you saw this part, they get the pearl. And next up is the city that Lucy wants to go to, that we're going to go to TwitchCon.
But I know. I'm sad I didn't do that. Don't, because I'm actually still upset about that.
It's okay. I don't think you missed much there. It's Las Vegas, and I like Las Vegas, but I'm kind of hating on Las Vegas right now because it's easy to remember who I like in sports because I always wear green and gold or green and yellow. And my favorite baseball team, mentioned that Midland Rockhounds last time, my favorite baseball team basically just got killed and is moving to Las Vegas. So I'm kind of pissed at Las Vegas. But on that hand, the other green and gold team, tonight in 2 hours, Oregon is playing for the Pac-12 championship in Las Vegas. So I'm back on the Las Vegas train. Let's go. I love Vegas. No, Vegas is fun. You should always go at least once.
I know. I'm going to have to make it work at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting place. I used to go a lot every other year, because we have family in Vegas, LA, and San Francisco. So we would drive between them every year. And so I grew up going to Vegas a lot before I could, you know, gamble or do anything remotely interesting while I was there. So only family trips.
You had maybe the most understated description. It's an interesting place. Las Vegas. This is like,
yeah. I need a thesaurus, like, genuinely. I have to stop calling things interesting.
Which is, of all things, Vegas. Yeah, like, you could say that, like, Amsterdam. Like, we went to Amsterdam. It's an interesting place, but it's just, well, I guess Amsterdam is kind of like Vegas. Maybe that's a bad one to say too. Warsaw, maybe. A more understated place, but like, Vegas is just.
It's a theme park for adults.
I really do wish that's, I could have. I do wish I could have experienced Vegas though before the family friendliness of it in the real in the '90s. I would say is when it started to turn that way more so. Like Vegas of the '60s and seventies, man, I bet was wild, mafia wild.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. I would love to go, but it's, I feel like it's one of those places that I would want to spend like 3 nights.
That's
max.
A lot. That's it depends what you want to do. Like if you want to go and what lay by the pool, come in the summer, lay by the pool when it's 115 outside and you know, you kind of get that and you go to a show. If you're going to go, like to me, if I'm going to go there, I'm going to want to stay out on the craps table late, go out, you know, stay up till 4 or 5 or whatever it is. So I'm there Friday night and by Sunday morning, I'm done. Like the 2 nights basically there. 36 hours or so is like perfect once you've done the stuff you want to do before.
They do have good shows that come through there. I would recommend seeing Cirque du Soleil. And I had to go see it with a chaperone because I was only 16.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's a good, like, it is a theme park for adults.
Yeah. And then a lot of house, what do they call when someone like plays there or has a home there, not hosted, not housed? Like Garth Brooks is there for The Wind was always there. Britney Spears was there for a long time.
Their
residence there.
Yeah, residency. It's a residency.
Yeah, there you go. So there's a lot that are always there. But yeah, Vegas is
Adele
something.
Adele is there.
Adele is there now, yeah.
Okay, wow, there you go. Yeah,
she's been there. I think she's every weekend she's got a show. And I would go to Vegas. I actually did tell my partner this. Like, I would specifically go to Vegas to see Adele.
Yeah.
What casino is she at? Do you know off the top of your head? Like where her residency is? Okay.
She wears wonderful, glittery black dresses every single week.
Outfits are just
insane. And I follow her on Instagram. Yeah.
There you go. That's how you do it. Vegas sometime. I'll hit up. At this casino, they eat a lotus flower and they get high as fuck. They're all giggly and they're there to have some fun and never leave. I did think, for all the faults of this movie, I thought this was actually really cool and really clever of a way to do the Lotus Eaters, who I remember always seeing from The Odyssey, there to do it. I thought this was a really cool way to do that because you get this guy from 1971, The French Connection, and he's been there. And that reveal of it, I was like, okay, movie again. They knocked this one out here. Very clever idea.
I mean, without the high element, like it's relatively close to like what happens in the books, and without like the weird flash mob that happens that fans don't really like. But yeah, like the concept of the Lotus Eaters is something that's like nice and interesting to come back to. But yeah, it's just someplace that just captures our ears for 5 days.
Yeah, I thought that was quite cool when they did the reveal that they had been there for 4 or 5 days, because I kind of lost all concept of how long we had been in that part of the movie for as well. And I loved that. Oh, I can't remember the character's name, but the guy with the goat legs, he just
Grover.
Had the goat legs. Yeah, Grover had the goat legs out, and it was just, I was like, okay, cool. Nobody's questioning the goat legs. But yeah, when the guy on the pinball machine revealed that he thought it was 1971, I was like, oh, this is not quite right.
Yeah, the Three Dog Night, My Mom Told Me Not to Come, is playing out. Three Dog Night's awesome. Oh, the oldies classics there. The hit physics in this movie are also great. When people get hit or run into each other, it is bone crushing. It is NFL level. And the first one was back in the Garden Emporium where Grover and Percy ran into each other. And Percy goes fucking flying like upended. I was howling. And this right here, is they're kicking everyone. They're running into them. I can feel this through the screen. This was really good. Like, it was just crushing. And now it's time to head to Hollywood, which, of course, is going to be their Hollywood. Yeah, the underground in that sense. And I kept trying to find the Latin saying of abandon all hope, ye who enter, which, again, is not from this. It's not from the Greek. It's from Dante's Inferno. Something that has always been, again, like near and dear to me. Was that, especially back when I, you know, used to believe in all that stuff. And there we get the River Styx, Chiron. Jackass Grover tries to pay him in U.S. dollars. And yes, and the line, burning money, man, we're in a recession, got a real big laugh out of me. Because again, 2010 was like almost, you know, that early recovery of 2008. Mm-hmm. So again, another timely joke, but I thought a funny one in there too.
I liked that one as well.
But this is the ferryman. They enter with some drachma. They sell this River Styx, and hello, Rosario Dawson as Persephone, and Steve Coogan. Steve Coogan is Hades. His voice earlier, it sounded somewhat familiar. I'm not going to say I knew that it was Steve Coogan. It's like, what is that voice? But I never in a million years would have thought it had been Steve Coogan cosplaying Mick Jagger.
I couldn't believe this. I couldn't believe it at all. Because I saw Rosario Dawson. I thought, oh my God, like she looks awesome.
Oh, she's
you know,
amazing
as Persephone. And then Steve Coogan. If I thought the Sean Bean jump scare was bad,
oh, yes.
The Steve Coogan one got me twice as bad.
He turns in the chair.
What is he doing here?
Yeah, super scary Hades in there. Scaring. I was going to say scaring all the kids, but maybe scaring Alyssa as well.
I mean, it's possibly me as well. No, it's so interesting. Like, there's that buzzword again. I need to stop. What? It's just shocking how far they went with the representation of the underworld. It does not feel like a kid's movie.
Mm-mm.
When you're kind of like hovering over and you're listening to people screaming and there's the fires of hell and stuff like that. Like, again,
oh,
I
yes,
the
souls.
The books, but,
no, when they're going to feed them to yeah. the souls coming up. That was, yes, even
also
to me.
That stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit extreme.
In the books, when they eventually end up, the whole thing about the pearls, like none of that's in the books at all.
Oh.
They just kind of go, they assume that Hades stole the helm, or excuse me, that Hades stole the lightning bolt. So they're just like, we're just going to go visit him. And then the entire lot of the book is just them doing their cross-country road trip. But so they never actually, they go into the palace of Hades, but it's basically like stepping into the front door and then they just go out again. Like they don't actually experience some of the stuff that's here, like the unwrapped version of hell, like that yeah. we see here. So again, like it doesn't feel very kid friendly.
Well, I was going to say, they're just a few feet from being forced into this pit of, fed to the souls, they call them, these. They weren't three-headed dogs, so they weren't like Cerberuses or anything
like
that.
It was definitely hell dogs, like chasing them in.
Yeah, like a hellhound there. The lightning bolt was, lo and behold, in the shield. Oh, that Luke, he pulled one on him, but Hades doesn't care. And Persephone is just going to double-cross him, I guess, because she is just oh so horny as she takes the bolt. And Emperor Palpatine's him against the wall and then just, you know, before literally calling off the dogs here.
Yeah, the dogs.
Wait, did y'all just hear a fluttering?
Yeah, I thought like.
That was my dog speaking
up.
Oh,
yeah, I thought
she,
so.
Yeah, she fell asleep under my feet.
Aww,
okay.
I thought that was what it was.
Perfect. We're going to keep that in because I literally heard that. I was like, did y'all, was there a fluttering when I just talked about that? Is that Fury coming back to get me? Big puppy energy. Well, there you go. Good contribution there. That scared me. That was my little jump scare of that there. But just she saves them. Persephone says she will take good care of Grover as there are only three pearls and he has to stay behind. They dream of Olympus and away they go to the Empire State Building, which apparently is the entrance to Olympus.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not have these British gods to the Greek Olympus is going to be in New York City? But okay, sure.
Yeah. There is a lore reason for that, if you guys are interested in it.
Yes.
Olympus moves. So like wherever the center of civilization is, when it was in Greece, they were in Greece. When it was in Rome, they were in Rome. And they've decided that the center of civilization is New York City and the Empire State Building.
East
so
Coast
in the books,
bias.
Like,
come on.
Yeah, in the books, they actually they don't enter from the roof. You enter from the ground floor and like one of the doormen is like secretly in on the fact that, you know, Olympus is right upstairs and you go to like the 300th floor, which sends you up into the clouds.
Man, yeah. So that's you just tickled the history part of my brain of what would be like the center. So definitely like 100 years ago in like the 1920s, it would be Paris. Mm. Like it would be France, because again, the lingua franca was actually French at that time. So how's she going to go back? Like, oh man, where did it go? It went to Istanbul. It went, okay, yeah, wow. Yeah. Now that would be a fun little thing. So I'm derailed in that sense. I've gone on that way. The Guinness combined with that. As everybody else, they're in Olympus, and I don't have anything else, I guess, after that, because I have Luke wanted to give it back. So I guess they talked about what it was down in Olympus, all the gods. Is that where they did there? And he apologized and said, hey, go back, and they blamed Luke.
God, I can't remember at this point.
I think that was it.
They have a big fight. Luke and Percy have the big fight.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Luke says he wanted to give the bolt to Hades to bring Olympus down, which, yeah, I get it. Like, you know, fuck a monarchy in that sense. And he wants to remold the world in a younger image. And I guess just, he never really says better. He just says younger, I guess his own image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it sounds like he would maybe be Hades, you know.
Like he would double cross Hades, but Hades has the bolt. I don't
yeah.
get it.
I kind of thought he might
there's team up with them or something. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I should say Hades has the bolt, yeah. but no, Luke has the bolt. And also, and it goes back to the thing I mentioned, the first thing. This is, and again, get those drinks ready to finish. This is New York City, less than 10 years after 9/11. So there we've got that marked off. Is everybody fucking blind? There's this massive fight up here. There's lightning going on. Again, Alyssa, you were living there at this time. At no point probably in the past 22 years or whatever, has New York City ever had something like this? And it not just be, no, the NYPD and their $5.8 billion budget would be all over these motherfuckers.
I don't know. Yeah, it's like yeah,
I don't know,
the
man.
Mist. But
the mist,
I think there's
mist.
A certain level of just like
but
New
they didn't
Yorkers
show a mist.
Just being like, eh, whatever. Yeah,
okay. Now I will draw. Okay, I will draw the line at that. Two crackheads banging on a subway. Yes, but not people lightning fighting on a roof. That will never be normal, even to New York City standards.
We had a crane fall down at some point from like a building, and that people were just like, okay, we're just gonna go around it, like. The only people watching were tourists.
But I mean, hey, you got shit to do, right? You can't do it. They start flying around and I start to Google Christmas gifts, but it ends when Percy channels the power of several conveniently placed water towers to use up the rest of the CGI budget to create the movie poster, and he stabs Luke with a trident, but I don't think it kills him.
I didn't think it killed him either.
Did he come back after he landed in the river?
I don't think so.
I don't think he did either. Maybe it did. Oh, fuck. Maybe he did kill him. Wait, Alyssa, is he in the second one?
Yeah. How much do you want to know?
Just yes.
I'm not going to watch
I don't know
any
if he's in
others.
The second film.
Lucy.
I have no idea if he's in the second film.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Like, book-wise,
he does come back
like, how much do you want to know about the books?
Oh, just if he died. Is he dead or not? So he's not dead. He must come back then.
Oh, no. He's not dead. Yeah.
Okay. Lucy, we're definitely going to watch the second one, because if it's so bad that it didn't get it, if it's worse than this one, oh, you know, I'm up for that. Sometime down the road there. Yeah, so they get back to Olympus, and Sean Bean gets to take his final lines before finally getting the role of Ned Stark, because that was the next year that Game of Thrones started. Yeah, and Percy arrives just in time to stop the war. I think this is what I was talking about earlier. And yeah, whatever. All's well that ends well. He says Grover to get he gets Grover out of the underworld. A lot of talky talk. Percy decides to stay at Camp Nowhere. I mean, Camp Half-Blood. But Chiron, in a very Dumbledore-esque manner, is upset that Percy did all that, but he's not. Percy's his favorite student because he disobeyed his orders. And
yeah.
like you,
can you that... say that as a teacher? Can you
no.
say you're my favorite student?
I mean, no, that'd be dumb. I would tell everybody the previous year, I will say my favorite classes, and I'll say a class that I don't like. But in the year, like, no, of course not. But if somebody did this, I would be like, hey, you got away with that. Good job in that sense. Don't disobey me again. Like, do it again and we'll have problems. Like, you got away with it this time. He's basically giving Percy a blank check to do whatever the fuck you want, because you are special and you are now above me in all decision making. Not a good lesson.
I'm very curious to see how that turns out for him in the second film.
I know. We need to watch the second one then, don't we?
Maybe we do.
Maybe later on. All right, Percy and Annabeth, I fuck each other by the lake. And then on to the sequel.
Woohoo!
Yay! All right.
Except there's a mid-credit scene I didn't know about.
Oh, do you want to know what happens?
Go ahead, Lucy. What was it?
They fucking kill Gabe Ogliano.
Oh, with the do they do
the
Medusa
head?
Or...
Yeah,
yes,
Medusa head
yes.
in the fridge.
Okay,
yeah.
That is canon. That is
That's
canon.
In the books?
Oh, I do. Why do I have a... Well, so... Here's what happens in the books. Sally, who hasn't, his mother, who hasn't really been doing much, she has aspirations of being an artist and whatever. So what they do is they actually kill all of them, like the entire table, if not just Gabe, using the Medusa head. And then she sells it. She sells like the whole table or just Gabe as like a poker player or something like that, or like the poker players.
This is the kid friendly version.
A ton of money.
Hold up. Yeah. This is the kid friendly version.
And then they just
version?
Get a ton of money for stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Hold. What? Yeah. That's as fucked up as anything that's been in here. What the hell?
Yeah. So they use it to kind of like get get a little bit of money to help them out.
Okay, wow. That does answer my question, because he's supposed to be moving all his shit out, and now they have a statue in their kitchen. But if they're gonna fucking sell it, then that was the plan all along.
Kind of a perfect plan, to be honest.
Jesus, yeah, came together A-team style. All right, so any last thoughts on Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief?
No.
We've gone
experience as a book reader.
Yes, I bet it was. I had a lot more fun with it, not knowing all that stuff you said there. But there we go. Yeah. That is Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief from 2010. All right. Next up, we got a couple things to do before we get to the end. The first thing is our D&D class. Is this one okay? We got three main characters. So we got three here to do. First one we have is I die. As I slowly choked to death there. First one we have here is Percy. And we had him as a fighter because it kind of wasn't in there with the ranger and all that. But, you know, he's got his sword. He kind of comes real well. I was about to say something really gross sounding. So, yeah, Percy as a fighter, he seemed to do pretty well with it. Never really barbarian screamed. Didn't really have a code or anything like that. We discussed potential of warlock because the ties to the blood and the family lineage. So maybe like a fighter warlock multiclass.
I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay. Lucy, what about Grover?
So we have Grover down as a druid, and that's mainly because of the animal tie of like him being half goat, a satyr. And I think that was pretty much all we had down for Grover. He was a pretty tricky one to nail down here, but he's wielding the powers of nature and adopting animal forms is the main tagline there.
Alyssa, earlier you mentioned like maybe monk.
Yeah, because so Grover in the books would definitely be like a druid. He becomes like very prominent in the world of the satyrs. He kind of goes around and is effectively like park ranger, for lack of a better word. And so, but he kind of, I think, sits in that, like he could still fight and he's, you know, preoccupied with like making sure that people are great and good and whatever. So very wholesome character, very nature-based as well.
But, he also unarmed fights, doesn't he? Or like improvised stuff, mm-hmm. like his crutches. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Okay. All right,
he
last
has pan
one.
Flutes that he uses.
Oh. Does he really? Oh, dang. Oh, yeah, satyrs do have those flutes. Oh, shit. Yeah. He didn't have one in the movie, did he?
Nope.
All right, fuck.
Just
right.
Really bad one-liners.
It just went down. This just went from S tier to eight. Oh, not yet. Okay. All right, so Alyssa, Annabelle.
Beth.
Annabelle.
Beth, fuck. Beth is on here, but Belle wasn't on. I lost it. Okay, Alyssa, Annabeth.
Annabeth is hard within, like, I think some traditional, like, all the traditional D&D classes. She's very clever. She's very resourceful. But she has kind of, like, a streak about her where if she, Brett and Lucy talked to me about this earlier, she'll follow the rules, but if she thinks a rule is stupid, then she'll be like, that's dumb, and then we'll do something else. There's an entire like anecdote about like her, a sphinx giving her a test, and she's like, this is fucking dumb. This isn't like an actual challenge. This is just like facts and trivia. So fuck this. But she likes to fight and she's clever and she has like a certain level of alignment toward and loyalty toward the gods and toward her campers. So I kind of had her as like a cleric paladin-ish there. Nothing else felt quite right.
There you go. We've multi-classed them all. All right. So, but yeah, any thoughts about that or any other ones you think may be better? Definitely let us know. God, I'm dying. All right. Next up is the tier list and the final thing to do. We were all kind of a little bit undecided at the beginning. So if y'all haven't, I'll lead off and y'all have some final thoughts before saying it. This is solidly going to be a C tier for me. It wasn't so bad that I was getting annoyed watching it. It was just dumb enough and unhinged enough to be funny where I would definitely watch this again with some drinks. And it was under 2 hours. So, you know, it's hard to, if it's under 2 hours, it's going to be hard to be that D tier. It's usually going to be wasting my time. So I'm going to be C tier here.
Yeah, you got any thoughts,
Alyssa? I think I was also between like a C and a D. I feel like as a standalone movie, if I didn't know anything about it, it would have been kind of like, like that's, it's not great. Was it a waste of my time? Maybe.
Yeah, a little bit.
it's kind of like, whatever. But I think like the book fan in me was just baffled at some of the stuff that was coming across the screen. I was like, I don't know what's happening. It all feels just a little bit wrong. So yeah, I would probably stick it somewhere between like a C and a D.
Oh, you got to pick though. It's got to be C or D. Where are we going?
I'll say C.
C? Okay. All right. So you would say that this would be a movie you'd recommend to rush through right before a meeting, or still no?
Before a really important meeting with your brand new chief product officer.
And you're getting annoyed.
You're watching it at 7 a.m.
And you're getting annoyed watching this. All right, there we go.
I literally had to put it on at 7 a.m.
Oh, no.
That might be me with Die Hard tomorrow, but that'll be a little better of a watch. All right, Lucy, where are we at?
I'm going to put it in C as well. I was going between C and D as well. And I agree, it's not bad enough for me to like really dislike it. I don't think I would watch it again, like even to make fun of. Like I didn't find it funny bad enough to make me think, you know, if someone wanted to come around and have drinks and watch a film to laugh at, I would never be like, oh, I've got this really funny one we can watch, you know, Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. Like, no, I wouldn't watch it. So for me, it's like a low C. If we'd had a C-, it would be a C-.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, I would never be the one to say do it. But if somebody was just like, oh, you did an episode over it, let's watch it. I'd be like, okay, let's do it for that.
Okay,
they would have to recommend it.
Fair enough. But yeah, it's a C for me.
All right, there it is. I think we've talked enough about this movie right there. Alyssa, where can we find you and everything it is that you do?
So you can find my podcast work. I host a biweekly podcast about the Witcher series where I have guests every time from different parts of the world, which has been super cool.
And I've been on it.
Especially for a pan-European series. You've been on it. At least we got to get you on at some point.
Oh my God, I'm so up for that.
Lucy needs to read the goddamn books first or something, at least some of the new one. The one that he comes out that's going to come out next year or whatever is after that. Lucy, you were going to fucking read that.
Okay. We need to start a book club of some sort.
Yeah, get the Peter Kenny audiobooks and just vibe. Yes. They're so good. Yeah, but you can find all of my Witcher stuff at Breakfast and Beauclair. So the website, Breakfast and Beauclair, Instagram, Breakfast and Beauclair, Twitter/X, Beauclair Pod. I think I'm on the TikToks, but I don't know how to use it. And you can see things like Doug Cockle and Peter Kenny going head to head in improv and stuff. So that's fun.
I loved that episode, by the way. Just to let you know, it was so fun. Doug Cockle, we've spoken to him a couple of times, and he's just such a joy to speak to. And Peter Kenny seemed like so much fun as well. And just them together, you can just tell how much they love it.
Yeah, they're real up
for
it. That's
so nice.
It was the first time they'd ever met was on Breakfast in Beauclair, which like blew my mind.
That's awesome.
Because they're like, we've been in different circles, but we've never actually spoken. I'm like, all right, hell yeah, let's do it.
That's
Peter's
awesome.
Peter's so chaotic. I love it. so you can find all of that at Breakfast in Beauclair. If you enjoy the deep cut into Lady of the Lake, so hope that show will be for you.
The best Witcher book. The best one. I will die on that hill.
I'm so glad to be done with Time of Contempt. And I can get on to all the good stuff.
I agree with you there.
So... And you can find the audio fiction show I executive produce, Peculiar Radio, which is about a radio station. When 15 seconds of dead air threatens their livelihoods, they're standing, the station. That is a full cast production. So 5 little mini-sodes and then a 12-part season 1. So you can find that wherever you get your podcasts, too.
Awesome. Again, all those links will be below in the show notes. Oh, Christ.
Yeah, those.
All those will be in the show notes below. You can find us, email us podonthepath@gmail.com. Check us out, patreon.com/onthepath. Extra episodes. The one for December by now will come out would have been Die Hard, and a special Bad Movie Month one for January as that's coming up. The Discord and all the social links below as well. Lucy, where can we find you?
You'll find me at Lucy J. Robin on all the socials. I'm doing lots of Mass Effect 2 and Baldur's Gate 3 right now, alongside all this wonderful podcast stuff. So yeah, you'll find me over there.
All right. You can find me mainly on Discord. Best place to find me there in that sense. Next month, Bad Movie Request Month starts. We haven't decided it yet. It's the first. We're going to go draw them this week. So whatever it is, we'll see you. And then Piper, the dog. Hey, Piper.
Bye, Piper. Bye, Alyssa.
Bye.